Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Blitz comes. He's flushed and looking and scrambling and leaping. It is in! Wow! Clayton Tune up, up and away.
It took three overtimes, but the Cardiac Cougs got it done against UTSA. They won 37-35, their week one game. We will, of course, talk all the NFL news and all of the Hunter Brown debut news, but we start with an exciting week in college football. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes, as always. Did you guys have a good weekend?
Yeah, that was one drunk-ass weekend. I'm talking about the college football.
Yeah, of course.
Just the college football.
Just the college football.
Of course I behaved, as you know. Yeah. I am a scholar and, someone who, on the weekend reads a book or two, goes to bed early.
Yeah, that was an incredible weekend of college football. Thank God that the sport's back and we get NFL action this weekend too.
It's going to be really fun. I think we did a good job this summer. We had some storylines to follow, but it's always nice to have the real thing to talk about, and we certainly had that. The Cougs down 14 points in the Alamo Dome, looking like they could lose their week one game against UTSA. Now, no disrespect to UTSA, who is a good football team. Just to be clear, they have a good football team. Sean, that was your pick, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was yours. So were you at home just sweating bullets?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, I say every point matters, but not every single point matters.
Yeah. Went to triple overtime. As somebody put on Twitter, Barstool, I think, bad night to be a Red Bull and vodka for Daniel Holgorsen.
Yeah.
What did you guys see that you liked that you didn't like from the Cougs?
Well, look, I just like that they could show the toughness, too, in a game on the road against a pretty good team, at least last year, that they don't care about a 14-point deficit. The thing I did not like the most is that the CBS Sports Network is one of the most difficult networks that I've ever had the obstacle of trying to find.
Really?
In the middle of a Saturday.
What do you have?
So I have Fubo TV.
I have Fubo too. I didn't know you had Fubo.
But I was at a friend's house who did not have Fubo TV.
Okay.
So this person had like the streaming apps, and we were trying to figure out how to get the game on for the longest time. And then it just turns out he didn't have CBS Sports Network. But it said that he had CBS Sports
Network.
So
he had regular CBS.
CBS.
Yeah, because you can like watch local news, but you don't have the SN, the Sports Network.
Right, you didn't have the SN. Oh. So we finally figured it out, and I was just like, okay, well, we watched other college football along the way. Look, this is a team that probably isn't going to face many tough challenges outside of this one the rest of the way. It really depends on how you feel about the other teams that are in the AAC. But it was a nice way to start things off for them.
It was fun. We got Texas Tech coming up, Kansas, Rice, which is always a fun one. But yes, UH usually has that one in the bag. And then Tulane. Not a lot of opponents on the schedule that I look at and I'm truly afraid of. Memphis, obviously, last year was a challenge for them. But you're talking about Navy, South Florida, SMU, Temple, East Carolina, and Tulsa.
Yeah, it's a cupcake buffet. It's one of the perks of
them.
The last year outside the Big 12 is that, you get to eat up, and we'll see if they can get it in 10 or 11-win seasons. Shame that the college football playoff isn't expanding this year like it might, and we'll talk about that, of course, later on in the show.
Yeah, 12.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. We'll break that down. But let's talk about one of my favorite storylines of the weekend.
Favorite?
And listen, I know we have LSU fans that listen to us because LSU has more alumni here than any other city in America. Fun fact. Lots of LSU bars, lots of LSU fans. But I got to say, I liked seeing Brian Kelly fail and be frustrated.
That was rough.
Family.
Well, at least the accent was gone.
True.
But goodness gracious, you thought the reason you bring in someone like Brian Kelly is that you're going to get the dumb mistakes out of the LSU football program. LSU's always been super talented. LSU always makes a bunch of dumb mistakes. That's been the reason that they're not on the same level as Alabama. And wouldn't you know it, in this game, they had a blocked extra point at the very end of the game. They had two muffed punts by the same player. Punts are hard to catch, but I don't know, maybe don't try to catch it the next time around. And with all of those mistakes, they still had a chance to beat Florida State at the end of it. But then Florida State wins. They're playing neck, which is
incredible.
For any LSU fan, you want to die already. And now here you are looking at what you saw. And this doesn't mean like the program's done. There's a lot of, I think, overreaction going on to it. And say, oh, you got to buy out Brian Kelly. Like, this is going to take some time to fix things. But I'm not going to lie. I was bummed out. I wanted to see LSU win. I hate Florida State. I wanted Florida State to continue to be a crater. Yeah. Florida State, look, fun school. But I want to see them continue to be the doormat to the Florida Gators. And so I was a little bit bummed out. I was rooting for LSU in that game.
I actually have a partial liking to the Gators due to one Thomas Earl Petty. So there you go. So his final score, 24-23. The Florida State Seminoles actually had a week zero game. So they are now 2-0 on the season. We'll see what LSU can do. Brian Kelly was so frustrated that he screamed, "Get out," to his special teams coordinator, who, by the way, is the only coach that followed him from Notre Dame.
He's a Napoleon, too. So, I mean,
that's true. He is a Napoleon.
Is he the worst? I can't say. But his dad, not my favorite. So this is a rough start for them. Look, it's better than the last time that Notre Dame played against Florida State, where Brian Kelly said that maybe the players should be executed. It was a slip of the tongue, but, you know, this is a step in the right direction.
It was the same sideline reporter, too, which brought back a lot of deja vu.
He didn't call for anyone to die. So, you know, the Mad King with his cute little Southern accent, even though he's from Boston, he's slowly figuring things out, I guess.
We are in a time where NIL is going crazy, transfer portal is going crazy, and the rumors have already begun. Now, we're seeing this in the NFL, too, when Kyler Murray deleted all Cardinals references, when Lamar Jackson deleted all Ravens references. Two LSU players deleted all online references, and this was immediately after the game. And to make it even worse, one of them was walking around, and it was Kayshawn, acting like he didn't even want to be there.
Yeah, that guy looked bad. Because the other guy, you understand why, because he muffed two punts in the game.
And he was disappointed in himself.
I felt so bad for that kid. They were zooming in on the sideline. You could tell he was just absolutely devastated. And then they got the ball back. Like, he technically wasn't the reason they lost. It was actually the blocked extra point, which was the reason they lost, not the two muffed punts. But, yeah, man, that other guy, I don't know what his deal was, but that is, I guess, some more of the flushing that LSU is going to need to do to turn the page, for lack of a better term, which doesn't always work out, by the way, as Sean Mapes knows about his beloved UT Longhorns. Sometimes, I know.
What the hell just happened?
You just caught a stray. Yeah, it's fine. What? It takes,
wake up, Sean.
It takes
Tuesday,
time.
Baby.
It takes time to turn the page. But yeah, that's a very frustrating one because I don't think this is a particularly good Florida State team either. I felt like this was one of those games where an LSU team of old would have absolutely run out of the building.
Shout out to my favorite Florida State alum, Taylor Tannenbaum. She's now on ACC Network PM. Oh. Catch her on that show. LSU plays Southern U next, followed by Mississippi State. So an opportunity for wins there for sure. The two teams that I cannot stand, arguably the most, Ohio State versus Notre Dame. And part of this, I think most people dislike Notre Dame fans. Growing up in Indiana and being an Indiana fan, not only were they always much better, but there was a cockiness about them. And then you had the people that were Notre Dame football, but IU basketball fans that I just wanted to strangle. 21-10, Ohio State Buckeyes did win.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, I guess, is better than we thought they might be. Because generally, this is one of those games where you see Ohio State's playing anybody, and you're like, oh, yeah, they're going to win by 40. And maybe Ohio State's a little bit worse than we all believe going into the year with C.J. Stroud under center. But it was a little bit disappointing. I get annoyed when Ohio State just cakewalks through the entire year, every single year. And, I mean, at least Notre Dame covered, so I had that going for me. But otherwise, like, that was one of those games where you think to yourself, this could be a marquee primetime kind of event. And, yeah, Notre Dame doesn't really show up, and Ohio State was kind of boring.
And to tell you the difference between Brian Kelly and Marcus Freeman is technically now 0-2 at Notre Dame because he lost that last game of the year. But people are still really, really behind him. Brian Kelly is 0-1, and people want him out.
I was going to say, I don't know. What's Marcus Freeman's buyout looking like?
Yeah.
Come on. Irish fans, I thought you cared about football.
Yeah. Yeah,
let this guy go 0-2 without any repercussions.
I think they've kind of settled into the fact that they're never going to be what they used to be again.
The fan base has changed.
And not to mention the expanded playoff again, but with the expanded playoff, they're like, well, we're just going to make the playoff every year, and we don't win no matter what, so how mad are we really? Like, let's just kind of keep the status quo.
One of the best parts of the Manti Te'o documentary is when they talk about the fact that Notre Dame is so dead set, the football program, on, like, mythical, like, Rudy, Manti Te'o's girlfriend, touchdown Jesus. Not that that's mythical.
In Rockney.
But you get what I'm saying.
We're going to run up the veil, and we're going to go, I'm going to jump it in the throat.
Yeah, that, exactly. It's speaking in tongues over here, religious Paul. One thing I was surprised, I didn't expect Georgia to stomp Oregon as badly as they did, 49-3.
Watching the Pac-12 get absolutely pantsed all weekend was, I'm not going to lie, quite enjoyable to me. Not just to see, as you mentioned, a murder by Georgia against Oregon. Because Oregon's been good the last couple of years. It's like the one Pac-12 program that's actually respectable. And you want to get into the Big Ten after that performance? I don't know. But also to see Florida beat Utah as well. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, take that, West Coast. You don't know this SEC life.
Yeah.
SEC Paul, wow.
Yeah, I do declare the Southeastern Conference
okay,
is
that
still
needs to be a thing.
The greatest football conference in all of America. Much like, you know, Robert E. Lee was the greatest general of all time. Yes. Well, Vanessa, that would
thoughts
be accurate.
Expressed on the show do not match the opinions of Sean and I.
The Confederacy, the SEC, they live on. They live on indeed.
Well, Dixieland delight over here. Give me your quick thoughts, our UT alum Sean Mapes, on Texas.
Two thumbs up.
Bijan looks good.
Should not have been a close game. Was not a close game. Good job. No matter how negative the people behind me at the UT game were, don't care. Good
yeah,
job.
Did you have fun? Did you have fun?
They're going to lose. What? Yes.
Did you have fun?
Yes, I did have fun. It was nice. Always nice to be back on campus, you know. What an old stomping ground.
Old stomping ground.
Two, 3 years ago.
Prediction for their score against Alabama this Saturday, September 10th.
Pain. Yes, from Rocky 3. What's my prediction? Pain.
Bad.
That's my prediction.
Only bad. I did watch A&M, too, by the way, and I got to say, Haynes King, their quarterback.
Yeah, you were not impressed.
He is not good. They got to move on. That guy is not good.
I think he has like 6 interceptions in like his first 6 quarters of playing college football.
Yeah, not surprising. He loves to throw the ball into double coverage. I don't know what the hell he's seeing out there. And he has this weird hitch to his motion when he throws the ball. And also, I was talking amongst friends while watching the broadcast, and this isn't his fault, but we couldn't get over the fact that either he has the biggest helmet of all time or the tiniest head of all time.
Fascinating.
We couldn't get over that.
Shallow Paul returns.
Keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, they beat Sam Houston 31-0, but shout out to Casey Keeler, Eat 'em Up Cats. They'll get him next week. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Guys, we made it. It is NFL week 1, and we are ready as the Texans gear up to host the Indianapolis Colts. That's coming up next.
You gonna answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
You guys, we made it. It's like as exciting as like the first day of summer break when you're a kid, the start of football season. I couldn't be more excited. I'm excited to travel to some Texans games, particularly, hopefully, the one against the Raiders. But it's going to be a fun year, and it kicks off against the Colts this Sunday at NRG Stadium. The Colts have lost 7 home openers in a row, as I can definitely attest to, so the Texans might actually win this one.
That's nice to do.
Yeah, that is nice.
Where we can actually say, you know what, they might win, as opposed to last year.
Well, they won their season opener last year against Jacksonville.
That is true.
If I'm not mistaken, because I remember Mark Ingram had a really good game. Look, I think we all feel more confident about this Texans team than we did last year. We're more confident in the competent coaching staff. Say that 10 times quickly with Lovie Smith and Pep Hamilton and whatnot. I think we're more confident in the direction that they're going. But what are some of the things that y'all are looking for as the Texans host Indianapolis?
It's just such a low bar to clear. But I think the possibility of this team being more than, we want to watch them lose?
oh, we want to see this team get better draft position.
Which draft? But yeah.
That was the worst part of last year. Like, all these people who are like, yeah, they're winning too many games. They got to make sure that they have more losses than anybody. I just hate when a city develops that mentality. And I don't know. I mean, people might still feel that way. Some of the more dorky folks on the internet, perhaps. But I think that's where we're at now, is this should be a team that is annoying. But I think that's best case scenario for them. So my excitement is a bit muted for this season because of it. I realize that it's going to be better than last year by at least all of the expectations that we have right now. I don't know that it's going to be significantly better as far as like saying, oh, this is something that they can catch and take into next year, because of the way that they're set up with all the older players and stuff who weren't here for that long.
My hot take is that this is actually a more exciting game than people are making it out to.
Oh.
And it's because the fact that both quarterbacks in their own way are in question. This is going to be Davisville's first true full season as a quarterback. It's not like he's going to be a rookie, but there's going to be some rust there. And we don't know what we're going to see from Matt Ryan. I think it's going to be strong. I think he still has a lot of gas in the tank, but he's not a spring chicken.
I don't know if he's got a lot of gas left in the tank.
So we'll see.
That's what excites me, actually, about just the situation that they're in. Like, no one in the AFC South is, I feel, head and leaps and shoulders above everybody else. I think that, you know, the Colts, I would definitely, if I had to bet on who wins the AFC South, I would pick the Colts. But, like, I don't feel very confident in it. The Titans, I don't know what to make of them at all because of all the change that has taken place.
And we are an anti-Tannehill show.
Of course, of the last year. Right. Tannehill's not very good. Derrick Henry's coming off of a major foot injury. A.J. Brown is gone. Their rookie first-round wide receiver has the asthma. Like, there's a lot of factors that you could kind of add up. Harold Landry just tore his ACL. And you look at the Titans and you're like, oh, I mean, the Texans should win at least one game against them this year. And they did it last year, too. So that's the cool thing, but that also gets us back to sort of where this team used to be in the Bill O'Brien era, which is, hey, they're good enough to, at the very least, compete in the AFC South, but what does it mean for the other 28 teams in the league?
Absolutely. Sean, what are you looking forward to, Texans-Colts this week?
Keep it close, because Nick Caserio said that they whooped them twice last year, and I was like, yeah, they probably did. I forgot that they lost 31-3 in Indy, and then in NRG, they lost 31-0.
Yeah, that was painful.
That's so much worse. And in the home game, Davis Mills had a whopping 49 passing yards.
It was probably one of the worst games of his season. But the Texans were frustrating because, do you remember then they like beat the Chargers?
Yeah.
It just was very inconsistent.
Beat Tennessee, beat the Chargers, yeah. Beat the Jaguars twice. Like a very weird year, because the Jaguars obviously were bums. And you're like, okay, you'll win one of those two games. But no, they beat them twice.
So what I'm looking forward to is, can't get worse, can it? So that's what I'm looking forward to.
It's like my dating life. It really can't.
We might even mess around and win this one.
Yeah, David Coley. If I heard the word, and I liked David, but if I heard the word consistency come out of his mouth one more time, I mean, I'm pretty sure if I went into my Gmail and searched Texans consistency Coley, that it would light up like the 4th of July.
He was being consistent.
He was being consistent and wanting consistency.
Analytics.
But I, oh God.
Wait, did he say that last year? So I didn't experience all of the David Culley show.
I had to do, well, I shouldn't say I had to do. I got to do when.
No, you had to do. You said it.
So when the World Series was happening last year and the away games were in Atlanta, Randy McAvoy, sports director at KPRC, would go to the World Series games, meaning I would take over for Texans duty. So I would do our Texans game day, which was a weekly Texans coaches show. So I did that with David Coley two or three times last year. Lovely human being. And analytics. I think he said that on a post game. Do you have it?
I know analytics.
Oh, no. I mean, he might have misspoke, right?
I know analytics.
No, 100%, don't do just to be clear.
The
was
man is dead.
He doesn't actually.
Football wise.
He
doesn't have a job in the NFL,
even,
right?
And the funny thing is, he doesn't even have a lisp. It really was just misspeaking.
It happens.
But it was so bad. It was like, oh, if Lovey misspoke, nobody would catch it. But because it was poor David
Coley. Yeah, you
Coley,
can't be David Coley and then also especially misspeak the word analytics. You can't get that word wrong.
Maybe he was taking a shot at the analytics community.
he was saying he knows analytics.
I want to say analytics now.
It's a hard for me not to say it.
I want to ironically say it going forward, just to make the analytics people mad.
I'm big on analytics. James Flick and Casario.
Our show is the analytics show. Okay.
Are you an analytics expert?
I'm really into the analytics. Give me a little analytics, huh?
All right. Michael Pittman Jr. possibly against Derek Stingley Jr. I think that could be a cool matchup. If you know any other matchups you guys are looking forward to seeing.
Well, look, does this run defense suck? And is Jonathan Taylor going to run for a million yards against them? I mean, they added a ton of defensive linemen this offseason. They have a bunch of linebackers, too. Do you feel like this team can actually stop the run? I don't know yet. We're going to see Big Heinie, you know, in the...
Stop talking about me.
In the defensive tackle group. Maybe he makes a difference. I know that Nick Casario at his press conference last week raved about Jerry Hughes and talked about what a good run defender he is. I mean, that's what the Colts are going to do best. Matt Ryan's not the one that's going to beat you. It's Jonathan Taylor. Is Jonathan Taylor going to be the guy that won people their fantasy football leagues last year? Or is he perhaps going to be a less dominant version of that? But, I mean, the odds are he's probably going to be still damn good. He's the best running back in the NFL right now.
The Colts also made some moves. The Texans made some moves. The Colts did get rid of Marlon Mack, but so did the Texans for a second time. And they cut Chris Conley again.
They cut them twice. Damn, that just hurts.
It's cold-hearted.
I mean, yeah,
don't
why
buy
bring
a
him
house
back?
Here.
What would happen for them to come back a third time? Because it feels like that's something the Texans might do. Like, hey, guys, I mean, I know we cut you twice in a week.
What's the money like on the practice squad again?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
It's decent, though, right?
It's enough.
Like, it's enough to where it's worth it to be on a practice squad and jump from apartment to apartment. I'm very excited for this week one. I do, and look, I know I'm from Indiana, I'm biased. I'm excited to see what the Colts can do, but I am really excited to see how the Texans fare in the AFC South. Like you said, I don't think they're going to get blown out every game against any of these teams. I think they're going to be better against the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like you said, they could beat the Titans one of those games. I think they could beat the Jags again twice, depending on how Trevor Lawrence has developed under Doug Peterson.
It's just a matter of how do they actually stack up against the rest of it. And, yeah, this is – I mean, look, the Colts have had the Texans' number for such a long period of time, too, with just, like, freakish bad things that take place. I mean, how many bad things happened for Deshaun Watson against the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah.
What was that game where – how many fumbles did he have in that game in, like, just absolutely catastrophic situations? Was that even one full season just blending together? Was that just the 2020 year where they had the two losses to the Colts and it felt like they fumbled it away – at the last
but then
second.
It was like T.Y. Hilton, the house that T.Y.
Yes.
And it's like T.Y. has always been really good against the
T.Y. Hilton owns the Texans more than perhaps any player in NFL history. And on top of that, you also had the game where the Texans lost at home 21-7, where Deshaun Watson looked absolutely terrible and did not get nearly enough guff for it after that game.
Yep. Go ahead, Sean.
Oh, I was also going to say that Dan Orlovsky one time beat the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
That went on to make the playoffs.
That is a great point.
That was the first year they made the playoffs.
True.
Yeah, the best Texans team ever lost to Dan Orlovsky.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Well. Merry Christmas. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Hey, we're in the single digits faux show as we look at the NFL season. So let's go around the NFL and talk about the biggest storylines. Our NFL segment is next.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
Are we at two?
We're at two.
We are at 2 days until the NFL season kicks off. Oh, baby, I can't wait. Let's go to our Jersey man. What's up, Paul?
Who can forget about the great Patty Driscoll? Born in 1895, Patty Driscoll went on to play for the Northwestern Wildcats. He was nicknamed the Wasp, catching the football, throwing the football, kicking the football. Also, who could forget Walt Kiesling, born in 1903, or William Roy Link Lyman, born in 1898.
Wait, what was that one?
His name is
William Roy.
William Roy Link Lyman.
I think I went out with him.
This is a, he was born in 1898.
Yeah, that sounds about my
time. I wonder how that would have gone. It's a weird number that hasn't had that many successful players. I guess Matt Ryan might be the most successful player in recent memory to wear number two, because for the most part, it's guys like Doug Flutie, Aaron Brooks, but also Tim Couch, and a bunch of kickers like David Akers and Steve Christie and Rob My Baronis Baronis.
There you go, My Baronis. All right, let's go around the league, talk about some of the biggest stories Mitch Trubisky named captain and team starter for the Steelers. So while Mike Tomlin never said he was the starter, we had the depth chart come out, and it is Mitchell Trubisky. Thoughts, comments, concerns?
Kenny Pickett, what are you doing? Just put Kenny Pickett in. He played well in the preseason, and you know this is not going anywhere with Mitchell Trubisky.
It really is the circle of life for NFL quarterbacks, because when Mitch was a rookie, the Bears had just signed Mike Glennon and started him for like four games.
And then brought
in Mitch Trubisky. And then 6 years later, here we are. We're doing the same exact thing.
Everyone is obsessed, and this is across sports, with a player who was drafted early, even if that player was incorrectly drafted early. I would say Trubisky is a big example of it, given that Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson went after him in the draft. I would also point to in Atlanta, which is a little bit of a different situation because the Atlanta Falcons are not good at all, that Marcus Mariota being under center there, it's because he has talent. He was a number two overall pick, but this is a guy that isn't very good.
Carson Wentz, Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm. That's why Wentz is getting another chance. That's why Goff's getting another chance. You're so right, Sean.
By the way, Rudolph is listed at number two and Pickett is listed at number three.
Yeah, Rudolph sucks, so I'm glad about that. We have some justice, finally. We can almost get Mason Rudolph out of the NFL.
Ben Roethlisberger has started a podcast because everybody wants to hear what Ben Roethlisberger has to say. He actually may be doing this at the right-ish time, and I say that because he just retired. I think if he waited a couple more years, people really wouldn't care. Just to be clear, I don't think people care now, but I think that it would be like even a larger gap if you waited.
If it's just a Steelers podcast, I think that people would actually listen to it, because I don't think that there's a like exclusive Steelers podcast that's hosted by one of their best players ever. But yeah, I'm doubting it's going to be particularly entertaining unless Ben Roethlisberger comes out with the most spicy takes this side of Aaron Rodgers.
The show is called Footballin', spelled F-O-O-T-B-A-H-H. Wow, what's an H? L-I-N. Spelled like the Pittsburgh people talk?
Yinzer or something.
Yinzers?
Yes.
So we'll see. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I don't know that I'm going to listen.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen.
Yeah, not my thing. Have you ever listened to Jay Cutler's podcast?
No, but it sounds like that. See, that seems like it might be interesting.
Jay will have a couple of interesting guests on it. It turns out to be a good conversation.
Plus, he's kind of a jerk, and that works for hosting a radio show or a talk show.
Who's the recently retired quarterback you'd most want to host a podcast or listen to their podcast? Like
Andrew
relatively
Luck.
Recently.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I want to know what happened. Yeah, he'd be a good one. Yeah. I think he's going to do well on Amazon.
I think Luck would be very... Would be a little bit boring.
I mean, because Andrew Luck, it would literally be the Andrew Luck book club from like 10 years ago. True. So
he would talk about concrete and different types of concrete, according to the Athletic
building.
Podcast. Kevin Stefanski spoke out about facing one Baker Mayfield week one and said, a lot of times I think it's overrated in terms of what they know and how we know and those types of things. He's a good football player, and we have to get to work and preparing to play him. Because they asked about the knowledge, and he said, sometimes I think it's overrated.
I like how he got right
into
Coach
Speak. Is knowledge overrated, fellas?
Look, it could be. I would love it to be overrated going forward so I can just be a brainless idiot the rest of my life. But in this situation with Baker, it's interesting hearing Stefanski talk about him. He doesn't want to talk about Baker at all. I heard it, and when it was that comment too, where he says like, yeah, knowledge, Baker Mayfield's knowledge of our offense might be a little bit overrated, and then going a little bit further.
It's like a backhanded.
It's not. And then he was also asked if he had a farewell for Baker Mayfield. I'm not going to get into those things. I keep conversations between all of our players in-house. We have talked about that. Okay, so you're a little snippy with somebody just asking like, hey, like, did you guys say bye at the end? So clearly, based off of this, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think Stefanski didn't like Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, it's way different than because Nick Saban was asked something similar about facing Steve Sarkisian, and he said, everyone talks so much about how assistants leave us and know our program. They don't talk about how much we know about them.
It's a great point.
Also, coming from Nick Saban, sounds like a vague threat, where Stefanski, it sounds like he doesn't want to talk about Baker Mayfield.
I know everything about you. All right, OBJ, where do we think he's going to land?
Well, does sound like he's not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere.
At least with the way that the Los Angeles Rams are handling this, because they have kept his locker room like as is. Even though Cam Akers now has his number three, Odell Beckham Jr. has a locker room in the Rams locker room, a team that he does not play for. I mean, power move by the Rams to like essentially claim that Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be theirs.
Do you think Odell Beckham Jr. is going to come back, and do you think he'd do some type of hold out, hold in. I mean, it's the Super Bowl champions. What more can you want?
I feel like the Rams, weirdly don't care in a good way. Like, they're kind of just like, eh, screw it. We'll see what happens. So we'll sign him. But I'm surprised that none of these other teams, the Colts, the Packers, other teams that have older quarterbacks that could probably use a veteran wide receiver, even coming off the injury that he's coming off of. Like, I feel pretty confident that Odell Beckham Jr., the issues that he might have when he returns aren't going to be massive athletic ones. The guy is a physical freak. He does get hurt a lot. Someone should roll the dice on him. I'm surprised that he is just set on going back to a Rams team where he would be the third option again.
His last injury was frustrating. His ACL gave out without contact. So I do understand the frustration there, but still, it's the Super Bowl champions. If you want to play somewhere, isn't it there? The Cowboys have added Jason Peters to their practice squad.
Jason Peters is 100,000 years old, and I think this goes to show you that they're not feeling great about their tackle situation because Tyron Smith had the knee avulsion, which just sounds painful whenever I hear it. And that means that instead of Tyron Smith, they are going to have Tyler Smith, their rookie first-rounder, step in. But I think you bring in a guy like Jason Peters, you're going to let him ramp up for a little bit, and then you're probably going to insert him into the starting offensive line at some point. Because I guess this practice squad stint for Peters is essentially him ramping up after not having an offseason. So Dallas offensive line, it is a big question mark going into this year.
It seems like every week there's been new news coming out of that, coming out of the Star. Can I interest you guys in some Jerry Jones math?
Hell yeah.
Jerry Jones was just on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas.
He talked about glory holes.
The optimism for the season. Quote, I have to believe 1-1 is 3. I can't operate where 1-1 is 2. Now, we all know it is physically, but 3 is where you have to go. You have to have optimism to operate out in the world. I have to believe 1-1 is 3, says Jerry Jones on optimism for the Cowboys season.
But he makes that up? But he has to believe, he knows, physically that it's 2. Physically, 1 + 1 is 2.
Now, we all know it is physically, but 3 is where you have to go. So he's basically admitting that he's delusional and that you have to be delusional to have optimism with the Cowboys. If you're a Cowboys fan, is this not concerning? I mean, it's another Jerry Jones thing. It's not exactly glory hole, but you have the owner basically saying you have to be delusional to believe in this team.
Well, maybe Jerry Jones likes to go down rabbit holes on YouTube, because this is the kind of, I think, answer that you could find on YouTube. In fact, I looked it up, and there's a bunch of posts about how 1 + 1 actually equals 3.
Are you joking?
I'm not. Look at, there's a long list. 1 + 1 = 3. Which is funny because there's a Disney song that's also up there that says 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. But
but 1 + 1 + 1 really is 3.
It is really 3. Physically. You're right. Physically. But not mentally.
1 × 1 × 1 = 3.
No. 1 × 1 × 1 = 1.
Is 1.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
1 × 1.
Times 1.
It is.
Because everything is times 1.
Because 1's down the line.
Because it's just, it continues
is
to be.
Is Jerry
1.
Jones better at math than Vanessa Richardson? 713-780-3776.
Are you smarter than an NFL owner?
Yeah. Okay, that I think I am. But anybody that's good at math, absolutely not. Okay, so the Cowboys are banged up. What do we think that means for their division? I'm just trying to distract from the fact that I
1 × 1 × 1 = 3. The Vanessa and Gallant radio program. We broke new ground. We are pioneers in the math industry. Okay?
It was a long weekend, guys. It was a long weekend.
Oh, was it? Oh.
It was, yeah. I worked. That's no excuse, though.
Did you work 1 × 1 × 1 all day?
Right. I did.
Or was it 3 days in a row?
I worked 3 days in a row, so I worked 1 + 1 + 1. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, in case you missed it. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we had a fun weekend in H-Town, and really all around sports. We had some college football. We'll be talking Astros. We're going to have Travis Johnson on the show later to talk Texans.
Hell yeah.
At 11:15. But there's always a couple of stories that fall through the cracks, particularly on a long weekend. And with that, we bring you what's usually on Monday, but today is our Tuesday, in case you missed it, segment. Let's start. Ooh, good music selection, Sean Mapes.
Elevator.
Let's start out with a little incident that happened. There was a Bad Bunny concert at Minute Maid Park a few days ago.
Which I wish I'd known about. As someone who's musically challenged, I actually like Bad Bunny.
You actually know and like Bad Bunny.
Yeah, the Puerto Rico
running
I went to.
So while the Texans were on their kind of West Coast road trip, Bad Bunny held a concert at Minute Maid Park. The stage or something did some damage to the field. And you could see it from the Crawford boxes. Interesting choice to have something there during the season. Now, I have no doubt that the Astros, they obviously had no clue that it would impact the field. But still, interesting.
I think it's weird that Minute Maid Park tries to have as many concerts as it does because the acoustics in that place are awful. It is legitimately hard to hear anything, like, just on the loudspeakers there. So, I don't know. I'd rather go to, you know, all the way up to the Woodlands, to the Cynthia. Or to White Oak Music Hall. Or Toyota Center or Energy Stadium.
There are a lot of concert venues in Houston, so yeah. I was surprised that they did it there a couple of days before there was a home game.
Minute Maid does look the nicest and has the most space for an actual stage, but yeah, the acoustics are just bad there.
And shout out to Jim Crane for getting multi-usage out of Minute Maid Park. All right, this was a big story.
Yes.
CFP Board of Managers decided on a 12-team college football playoff during a meeting.
I don't like it.
12.
I think 8 would have been fine. I think 6 would have been fine. This is too many. You're going to bring in now more people to the party, and you're going to welcome more absolute decapitations, courtesy of Alabama or Georgia, like we saw Georgia do to Oregon, or like we sort of saw Ohio State do to Notre Dame. Now we're basically just guaranteeing that the same teams that we've seen in the college football playoff just about every single year are going to make it. Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Clemson, and probably Notre Dame a bunch.
Are you excited? So here's where I'm at with 12, because I think 12 is too many. My ideal number was 8. 12 is too many. But I am excited to see some of the Cincinnatis and some of the schools like that that just have kind of a random breakout year that, quite frankly, they probably won't have for another 10 years make the playoffs.
I would like to see them get in. The problem is when we see them get in and then they get absolutely annihilated.
Right.
That's when we're going to start wondering why we have this and why we're also minimizing the importance of the regular season along the way. And I got to say, after this weekend, with the amount of important games that took place with dramatic finishes and all, you want to have a little bit of meaning attached to these games that take place in week one and week two. This is going to make it so that essentially a disappointing performance like this by Notre Dame against Ohio State, if 12 teams get into the playoffs, Notre Dame has a pretty good chance of getting back in, because it's generally not about it's about when you lose. And if you're able to get things together at the end of the year, a loss like that to Ohio State will get completely overlooked, at least with the way that they've traditionally looked at the college football playoff.
There were 4 teams. There are now 12. 4 times 3 is 12.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In case everybody wants
that,
to.
That is impressive.
No.
You know what? We all forgot about one time.
Johnny Manziel is getting a Netflix documentary, fellas.
Yes!
Obviously, Heisman winner at Texas A&M. The preview was weird. It just showed him sitting down. The teaser wasn't much of a tease, but I'm not going to lie. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. And if he lets everyone behind the curtain from the very beginning, because I remember the first time I had ever talked about him was doing a Sports Flash over at the Texans flagship, and I didn't even know how to pronounce his name. I called him Manziel, because he got arrested one offseason. This was before Johnny Manziel became Johnny Manziel. And then I remember going to his first game against Florida, and I watched him on the field, and I was like, oh, he's pretty good. But didn't think that would turn into, you know, like the obvious ridiculous season that it ultimately did in 2012 with A&M's first year in the SEC. But there's so many stories about what this guy was doing as just a partier. Him dressed up as Scooby-Doo for Halloween with the young ladies around him. I'm looking forward to this. I think it'll be fantastic. And I think that Manziel, in a way, realizes that this is kind of the last chance that he has to
monetize,
make his 15 minutes count. And I think he's going to, because of that, probably let people into the know, as opposed to the way that we saw Derek Jeter not let anything get past the strict eyes of his editors or whatever.
Exactly. Like, all this, it's 100% dependent on how willing Johnny Manziel is to, like, tell the off-the-field stories of, like, how crazy it was and all that. Like, and I also do believe that he will, at least, he'll deliver. Like,
he'll
I think he'll deliver, but it'll be great because Cliff Kingsbury was the offensive coordinator on that team, so it'll be fun hearing from Cliff and Kevin Sumlin. Mike Evans was on that team. It was like a crazy time. So, yeah, I think it'll be a great doc. And also with Ben Roethlisberger having a podcast, like, Johnny Manziel, get a podcast.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Just makes easy money.
My rule now is that I'm not going to watch a documentary that's produced by the person it's about. Because, like, with Derek Jeter, I could already tell by the reaction that I wasn't going to think it was interesting. I'm sorry. I want to hear the beef, the drama, the women. That's what we want.
It could work. I mean, the Teo documentary was, you know, obviously.
He didn't produce it.
I know he didn't produce it. But the essential documentary was like, hey, Manti Te'o, y'all gave him a bad rap. Like, they can be good when it's, like, almost about fixing a person's image.
Did you ever watch it?
Yeah, I did watch the documentary.
Was it good?
I loved it. The Teo documentary was fantastic. Yes.
Highly recommend.
I felt very bad at the end. And the fact that that guy still has any optimism of any sort after going through all of that, I give the kid a lot of credit.
Because he has to believe that 1+1=3.
He absolutely does.
And that
does.
Girl he's texting across the country is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lene.
Shout out to Lene. Pour one out for Lene. Your boy Emmanuel Acho. Sean, shout out to you for sending us this, because I saw it at first.
I had to pull over.
And I thought it couldn't get worse. College football is back, says Emmanuel Acho. Here are the rules. Now, let me describe what this is. This is kind of a motivational poster type deal. It has Emmanuel Acho's face at the top. And it says, number one, don't call me anytime on Saturday. Number two, if for some reason you decide to text me, it had better be to ask, did you see that? To which I reply, what do you think? Number three, if someone is dying, call 911 before you call me. They are more likely to answer. Number four, if someone has already died, do not call me. There's nothing I can do. There's no need for us to both be sad. Number five, if you are confused about my availability until January, please refer back to rule number one. This was obviously supposed to be a funny post about how college football is going to rule his life for the next couple of months, right? What did you discover, or somebody on Twitter discover?
Yes, Twitter detectives discovered that he actually just took this from, I assume, a Facebook dad somewhere down the line. The original post, I believe, had an Alabama football logo on it. So he changed. Credit to Emmanuel Acho. He did change the font and color of the post and put his own little face on it. So it is an original thought, even though it's the most unoriginal. Just the the rules thing is also just so unoriginal. And then also the fact he plagiarized it, not great.
This is the equivalent of putting up a live, laugh, love sign in your apartment.
But also making it seem like you made up live, laugh, love.
Yes.
Great point.
Like putting your face and then in quotation marks, live, laugh, love.
I just want to do something different this fall, and I think I'm going to go to a pumpkin patch and watch Hocus Pocus and drink pumpkin spice lattes because I'm original, and no one's ever done that before.
Don't smear Hocus Pocus. That's a damn good movie.
That's a great movie, by the way.
It's a damn good
movie. I'm just saying, it's very basic.
That is what Emmanuel Acho needs to do next.
Like, here's my
October 1st, be like, don't talk to me unless I've had my pumpkin spice latte, and make it seem like it's his own idea.
Here's my thought. I don't think he's running his social media anymore. I think he has a team. Or a brand person.
Is it a team of 50-year-old uncles?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he has somebody that's supposed to increase his brand.
Yeah, I think.
Good job.
I mean, we're talking about him, so.
I don't think in the way that he'd want, though.
I don't know. Maybe he wants
We're calling
that
him
way.
A plagiarist and unoriginal.
But he's a leader of men, and he's trying to lead people to realize that plagiarism works on social media, which it does.
Can't wait to watch his new show.
That is a fact.
Quinn Ewers got towed during the game. He tweeted, quote, how'd I get towed during the game?
Yeah, UT parking has been putting up some great numbers this year. They got one of the receivers suspended for a week because he parked in the wrong spot and put a boot on his car.
Is it a nightmare at UT parking?
Oh, horrendous. Because the campus is in, like, downtown Austin. And then there's permits and you have to have different, everything to park on campus. It's impossible to park.
Did you just walk every day?
Yeah, I walked to class every day.
I would have just walked.
Yeah. But, I mean, Apparently, Quinn Ewers, it was his Porsche that got towed. That was the interesting nugget to learn.
He also looks like someone who wouldn't drive a Porsche because he looks like, I don't know, an extra in Roadhouse and or the Dukes of Hazzard with that mullet, that lettuce, that party going on in the back. So honestly, I would maybe think to myself, yeah, does he belong here on UT's campus? Here we are, the ivory tower of the University of Texas at Austin, and we don't see fit that this man should be parking on our campus parking.
What's enrollment?
I mean, it
there?
Is a Porsche though, so that fits.
Maybe. What's enrollment?
What do you mean?
How many people?
Oh,
are there?
Enrollment.
People?
Oh,
30,000?
No, it's 50,000 undergrad.
Oh, damn!
Wow. Yeah, parking would be awful.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
I went to a college with 6,000 people, and most of them were online, and parking was terrible. I didn't realize it's that big. All right, there's your in case you missed.
Everything's
segment.
Bigger in Texas.
Everything is bigger.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, let's hope. 3 days of a weekend, so we missed a lot, but that's the latest. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. It was a fun weekend for the Astros, and last night, oh boy, we got a treat. We'll talk about that coming up next.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.